scripts are you following? We all have scripts that guide our behavior. These scripts are rooted in our culture, our upbringing, and various other factors. But how often do we stop to examine these scripts and ask if they still serve us? And how often do we update them when they don't work for us anymore? This week, I talk with Kathy Hadizadeh about these scripts. We also explore the connection between imposter syndrome and anxiety. And we look at how to better manage these experiences, including leveraging the power of the pause. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. Welcome to the Imposter Syndrome Files. My name is Kim Menninger, and as an executive coach and former high-tech leader, my personal mission is to help professionals overcome imposter syndrome so that you can advance your career with confidence. Each week, I interview a new guest who brings a powerful perspective to this conversation, including personal stories, best practices, and new insights. The more we talk about this issue, the more we destigmatize imposter syndrome, recognize that we're not alone, and empower ourselves to access the tools and resources that can help us and those around us. Thank you so much for listening and for sharing with others you think would benefit from this conversation. Welcome, Kathy. It is such a pleasure to talk with you today. I'm excited for our conversation, and I'd love to start by asking you to tell us about yourself.
Hey, Kim and the audience. And I have to say, the pleasure is all mine. I am very excited to be on this, especially with the topic that we are hitting today. And we're going to talk about it in a second. About me, I come from a background in corporate technology and data and engineering for 15 years. And during this tenure, one of my assignments, I was lucky enough to work for DirecTV under the leadership of a CEO and a CIO that believed in how we can bring fearless leadership to the organization, especially in an organization that was very stress-driven and very, with the stress comes a lot of fear. And so that journey opened me up to discovering that a lot of the things in myself, including the fears I've been holding, and I was thinking, oh, this is the way life should be. I had to go and question myself. And a couple of years later, I was presented with a health challenge. And that health challenge brought me to a pause, to a complete stop. And I had a chance to rethink my life. And I really liked the kind of discoveries I made in that kind of program. So I started my own company, and we focused on executive leadership coaching and mindfulness programs, especially for folks and leaders in technology, product, and engineering.
Wow. So can we go back for a moment? I want to ask you what that experience was like, what fearless leadership was defined in that organization, and what you took away from that in terms of thinking about the opportunity for us as individuals and organizations?
That's a very good question. So at that time, the idea was whatever that we have failed on, and we might be feeling ashamed of it, or we might be afraid of talking about it, let's just bring it out. So we had a vault of failure. And people were, and because we had a gamification platform, people were actually competing to bring up their failures or the projects that haven't worked in IT. And there is no shortage of projects when you are talking about a company at the size of DirecTV at that time, which had about, I think, $20 million worth of development every quarter. So it was an amazing thing to see how the mindset shifts when we are thinking as failure as a stepping stone and as an opportunity versus thinking that, oh my God, I messed up. Where is the next stone that I can go and hide under it?
Yeah, that makes such a difference in how we see ourselves and the risks that we're willing to take, the ways in which we're willing to put ourselves out there. And you talked about how high levels of stress really affect us, right? They make us much less likely to want to take risks. It becomes even scarier. So it's interesting because it feels so obvious that the conditions affect what you get from your people. But I feel so much so much stress and fear-based leadership out there.
Yes. And the beauty of what I discovered was, Kim, that we are not aware of it. I mean, I was not personally aware of how much I was programmed to act in a certain way. And especially if there are a lot of women listening to our conversation, women actually in my work, I have totally seen that you can even categorize how some of these things come across. We will talk about that categorization in a bit. But we put a lot on ourselves, and also we tend to sometimes not want to look at those things that we do not feel very good about them, or not even question them. For example, I was born in a country and in a society that you had to become either a doctor or an engineer. There were not that many professions in between, or they were not regarded highly. So I was programmed in a certain way. Okay, you study, you go and get a job, and your job, you go up the ladder and you do this and you do that. And you see, there is a lot of expectations set in a person's mind from a young age. And I had not realized that how I am going based on the script, not ever allowing myself, well, now I have kids. Does this script still work? Now I'm living in a country which my family is far away. I don't have immediate family to support me. I have two little kids. Does this model still work for my life? You know, those questions are not very easy questions that we ask ourselves all the time. And sometimes the answers are scary or are not very clear to us. So it makes it even more doubtful if do we even want to ask that question.
I think that's such a good point, because I often think about it as a function of time. We're moving so quickly that we're not pausing long enough to ask the questions, but you're absolutely right. There's an avoidance factor there too, because we're afraid of what we'll find when we ask the question.
Right. Absolutely.
So can you tell us more about your own journey and how you got to the point of thinking differently, especially because you talk about these scripts, which I think we all have different scripts.
Yeah, I think most of the ambitious high achievers have some sort of a script. And to be honest with you, I think those scripts are pretty useful when we are starting the journey, when we are young and driven. I actually, when I'm looking at my kids right now, I have a 15-year-old. Oh, I have to say 16-year-old. She turned 16 last week. I keep saying 15. So I have a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old, and I kind of like that script. I think that the script really helped me at that time. So I would say till some part of our journey, and while we're gaining the experience, we're gaining the credibility, we are trying to know ourselves and our strengths and our weaknesses, maybe the script is useful to some degree. But beyond a certain point, I think we should start having some pauses and questioning. Am I still in the right track? Does this still feel good? And to answer your question, Kim, I personally, at one point, tried to do that, but I failed miserably. When I became a mom, I went on a maternity leave, which the company at that time, we were talking about 16 years ago, they said, oh, you're going on disability leave, which I was like, no, I'm not going on disability. I'm giving birth to a child. But since women are listening to it, it was just very mind-baffling for me that we call maternity leave disability leave. That was something I had to deal with it. But when I was pregnant, I was struggling with the fact that, okay, how do I keep my career trajectory and all of these things that I have achieved so far? I didn't know what motherhood would look like. It's a journey that I was going for the first time. So I didn't know. So that was my struggle. But when the baby was born, my struggle shifted, because I was like, oh my God, the baby is so much fun. Now the clock is ticking that I have to go back to work. But do I want to go back to work? And I started thinking, I'm not sure if I want to go back to work. But then what happens to, you know, money and benefits and all of those things? And my life went in a direction that I did not go back to work immediately after after my daughter was born. But I had to eventually go back because of the commitments of life. And the reason I am mentioning this is that I had that struggle for years. I had another kid coming and the ambition was there. The babies and the child was there. The ambition was there. I was a human being. I was a daughter. I was a wife. And at one point I was like, wow, I feel really like walking in this tightrope, juggling all of these balls, and each of them seems to be made of glass. I cannot drop any of them because they can break. So that is a lot of stress and that's a lot of pressure.
Absolutely. I love the way you describe the glass, juggling glass balls, right? Because that just raises the stakes so much when you're not only trying not to drop something, you're trying to not to drop something that's so fragile and important, right? And it feels really hard. Like you said, at various stages of our lives, we don't know what we don't know. So if we're having a baby, we don't know what that experience is going to be like. If we're thinking about taking the next step in our career, we don't know what that's going to actually look like in terms of our careers and our lives. And so there's a lot of uncertainty and that comes with this examination that we're talking about too. So how do you think about the experience of imposter syndrome in the workplace?
Oh, I love this topic because I don't think there is any week that goes by that kind of conversation doesn't come up in one of the conversations I have with my clients, whether it is group or one-on-one or even when I'm facilitating mindfulness sessions. Sometimes when we talk about how we feel, people are venturing into those kind of emotions. So let's first put our definition down of what is imposter syndrome. Imposter syndrome is when we feel our accomplishments, our achievements, our experiences are not making us eligible for the praise or for the recognition or for the money we are earning. So that imbalance between two is what is an imposter syndrome. Now, based on this definition, the biggest thing is that we will be living in a state of anxiety because of such definition, because we are thinking, oh, I'm making this much money or I have this position, but am I really fit to be in this position? Do I know everything that is needed to be in this position? Am I in the right spot? Or somebody's going to figure out tomorrow morning that she really doesn't deserve it or he really doesn't deserve it. So this kind of being on the alert for always being found out that a person is a fraud, that produces anxiety. And what happens in the brain is that it increases the level of cortisol hormone. And while some stress, I mean, there is good stress and there is bad stress. Not all the stress is bad, but this is not a good stress. This is an anxiety-driven type of stress. And that high level of cortisol is not going to serve a person's health and is not going to serve a person's leadership, because then they will not be able to not be effective and confident and assertive in the way that they should be in such a capacity that they are.
I am so glad that you raised this connection between imposter syndrome and anxiety, because that's exactly how I think about it as a person who has struggled with both at various points in my life. And while imposter syndrome is not a diagnosable condition in the mental health arena, those feelings are anxiety-based, as you describe them. They create stress and they make it difficult for us to show up as our best selves, to be creative, to be engaged. We're always worried. We're always waiting for that moment when someone finds out that we don't actually belong here, right? So how do you think about addressing it then, if we look at it through that lens?
That's a good question. I want to venture a little bit more first, Kim, into the different types of the dialogues that people have when it comes to this imposter syndrome in their head. Because imposter syndrome really is that voice that we carry in our head. There is really no physical thing happening. It's just that dialogue in our head that translates into the energy and that translates into the physics because of the cocktail of hormones that get secreted in the brain as a result of our mind and as a result of our thinking, which impacts our energy in turn, and that energy that gets translated to people around us. So looking at it from that lens, it might be fun for people who are listening to us, that especially when working with the clients, and maybe women can have more of that. In 2020, KPMG did a study, I believe, that 75% of the women in higher leadership positions were sharing that they are dealing with imposter syndrome. So there are different categories of people when it comes to that. So the category one are the experts, people who believe that they should know everything and feel ashamed when they don't. And I can't tell you how many people, how many women, especially more, I've seen it in women, that they come and say, I wanted to say, but I was not sure if I know everything if they ask me a question. So I decided to stay quiet. So category one is expert. Then the other category is, I call it soloist, because they believe that they need to do everything alone. Otherwise, they cannot get credit for that. And guess what? That will not serve their leadership. They can be amazing individual contributors, or thinking that I can do this better than anybody else and I can do it faster. And that is another case of imposter syndrome, because they feel like, if I let other people do that, then I have not proven myself. What am I getting the credit for? They are doing it. Why should I get that credit?
It's like cheating.
Cheating. Exactly, Kim. So you see, there are different types. Another type of it is people who think that they have, they are superwoman. I see that in a very high power women, especially high power women, when they have kids, they really think they have to be superwoman, some of them. They really think, I can do it all, whether it is being in the boardroom, whether it is dealing with the shareholders of the company, whether it is dealing with the kids. Well, something is going to drop somewhere if I am not able to hold on to all of these things, and if I'm not able to get the praise. They like to get the praise, but in their heart, they are always thinking, do I deserve the praise? Because no, my kids are not doing very well when I'm on a trip, three weeks a month. So those dialogues are the things that are happening. And it is a different type of imposter syndrome in a way, because they are still questioning their position, their ability to be a mom, to be a leader. And these are all in the same category.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And you can see how it shows up differently in different people based on their own scripts, as we've talked about, right? Own socialization and your own unique experiences.
Yes. You see that the script is coming up. So yeah, we all need a revision of that script at times, Kim, and we need that opportunity to be able to look into that script to see if we need a revision.
Yeah, absolutely. So are there specific things that you recommend we do or think differently about to manage imposter syndrome in the workplace?
Yeah, one of the biggest things is recognizing it. I really think sometimes we don't even know what we are dealing with. And that impacts our mood. So one thing that we need to pay attention to is paying attention to, how do I feel? Mm-hmm. That simple question. You see, we see people in the street, and always people say, hi, how are you today? And we very automatically, all of a sudden, I think most of the people say good. I don't see many people who say bad or I'm having a day or whatever the case is. People normally say good because they don't want to open up to a stranger. But it is important to check in with ourselves. How am I feeling? If I am seeing I am losing the drive and motivation in me myself, that is telling me something. I have to see, why am I losing the drive and motivation? Because as part of the imposter syndrome, the chances are we will have a lower level of dopamine in our brain. And dopamine is the hormone that impacts our motivation, our drive. If we pay attention to why I'm not excited about this job anymore, why I'm not excited about whatever it is that is happening anymore, that is a clue. If you feel that way, you need to stop and become very curious, like a little detective. Just think about Agatha Christie or whatever detective of your liking, Sherlock Holmes, whoever you like, and really become curious and allow yourself to start asking those questions. Now, mind you, Kim, I don't think there are many people who start doing this on their own.
Mm.
Because, first of all, we are talking about very busy individuals here. And second of all, if we start asking questions, and those questions are hard, and we don't have an answer right away, how excited are we going about going back and asking that question from ourselves again? So that's why I suggest that people need to think of a support system when those kind of things happen. And people, if you're listening to me, know your support system is not your friend when you call, when you're driving in a car or you're washing the dishes or you're feeding the kids, because the chances are they are doing the same things that you're doing and their attention is not with you. And if their attention is not with you, and they don't have the experience, they are not able to be fully present with you so that you can explore yourselves.
That's a very good point.
Because I have made that mistake, Kim. I'm being very honest here, because I was thinking at that time, oh, yeah, I'm talking about it. I'm bringing up the question. And I was calling my friends and burning their ear and with my talking and with my asking questions. But I was not. One thing I was missing was that they are in the same boat. How can they help me? And they are not trained professionals for this purpose. What am I expecting? But that was my lack of knowledge. That at the time, we are talking about 2014 and 15. And at that time, coaching was not as known as it is now. The pandemic coach put coaching on the radar, definitely. The pandemic put mental health and paying attention to our emotions on the radar, definitely. So those things didn't exist as much at that time. I didn't know anything about coaching. I always had mentors and I served as a mentor, but coaching is very different from mentorship. Advisory is different from mentoring and from coaching. These are all different nuances. So to answer your questions, I gave you a very long answer, but I ask people to take a pause, become curious, and see where is it coming from. A lot of people will tell them, oh, ignore the voice.
Mm.
That is not something that I would recommend people to do. Because if you were able to ignore the voice, you would be in a different position. We cannot just say, oh, ignore the voice. The voice is coming for a reason. The voice is like a nagging child, and it will nag for that ice cream until you pay attention to it.
Yes. Yes. I use that same image. I really like that. There's a reason why this voice shows up. And I really like what you're talking about of paying attention and being curious, because one of the things that I often say is that if you're going about your day and you start to feel something uncomfortable, it could be anxiety, could be frustration, could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it as your body's check engine light, right? Mm-hmm. Like on your car, as soon as that light comes on, that's an indicator that you need to check something out and figure out, you know, sometimes it's a false alarm, sometimes it's a bigger problem, mm-hmm. but it gives you a signal to stop for a moment, to pause, and to start to ask those questions like you're talking about. What just happened, right? Like, why did I suddenly start feeling that way? What's going on? What am I telling myself? What are the situational factors that led me to feel this way? Because one of the things that I have come to learn as someone who has struggled with anxiety my whole life is that you cannot manage anxiety at the anxiety level. It's too hard to get your arms around. You can't just manage the thoughts of, oh no, I'm going to fail. Oh no, people are going to find out. There's nothing you could do with that. But if you start to tie that to specific things, like the reason I feel like I'm going to fail is because, right? Now you boil it down to specific variables that you can actually control, things that you can take action on. Mm-hmm. And now you start to feel like you have more power over the situation, as opposed to just repeating on a loop all of the things that you've done wrong, all of the ways in which you think you're not actually qualified to be doing the work that you're doing, right? There's no way to break that cycle.
Wow, Kim, I really liked what you said in here, because it goes back to the principle that you cannot solve a problem with the same level of consciousness that created it. So something has to shift in order for us to be able to solve that problem. And you are very right in having that dialogue of, I shouldn't have done that. How could I have thought like that? What was I thinking? I mean, these are the things that we tell ourselves. And some people say it and they move on. And some people will spend a day or two or three or a week or a month saying the same thing. And if we see ourselves in that situation, we need to be able to recognize that. How much of my time is dedicated to talking to myself like this? And how much am I praising myself, or I'm cheering up for myself, a cheerleader of for myself? Because if we are spending a lot of time in here, then we cannot be in a very positive thinking mode. It will be very impossible in a way, because we will not be having this right hormones being secreted in our brain. It will not be enough serotonin coming up. Now, we have to consider something here, Kim. And that is the power of having a space, maybe with other people even, to be able to be vulnerable and share this dialogue without the fear of being judged and without the fear of, what will these people really think of me? Will they think less of me? And that is one aspect of it. When we are in a group and we are able to share that, the other aspect is that I'm not the only one.
That's right.
That's such a relief.
Such a relief. And it's so interesting. And this ties back to something you were saying earlier too, of just when you name it and recognize it, because there are so many people who to this day don't know a lot about imposter syndrome or any of what we're talking about. They think it's just them. And every time I talk about this in a group setting, someone will come to me and say, thank God it's not just me. I'm so relieved to know that this is a recognized experience that people have, and that it's not just something that I'm going through. And so that alone is very powerful, to feel like we're in this together. And we can support one another in the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kim, I want to mention something. This is not imposter syndrome related, but it brought me that years ago, I went to a day of dealing with anxiety with Diana Winston from UCLA Mindfulness Awareness Research Center. And she had a beautiful example that I want to share with the audience, which as a mother, I have experienced it many times. And she was saying that, for example, my daughter comes home and says, for example, my hand is hurting, for example. I totally could see that in me. She was portraying it. And she was like, oh, I start thinking, why is her hand hurting? What if she has something going on in her hand? And what if tomorrow morning when she wakes up, she cannot move that hand? And then I have to take her to the emergency room. And tomorrow I have some some engagements. Now I have to cancel them, or maybe tell them in advance that I'm not able to be available. And look at that story. Mm-hmm. I mean, the hand hurting. We don't know all of these things. And look, this story that we, and I have done it in my life with the kids. I mean, they have a fever. I write a book in my head about their fever. How should I protect myself the next day and the next week if they get sick? Part of it is being a good mom, but part of it is it hasn't happened yet. Can you be in this moment? I ask myself. So I really like that example that she shared about anxiety, because that's what anxiety does to us. It makes us write a book about something that does not exist and it might never exist.
That's right. That's right. And I do think that there is there's an intended benefit, that the intention on the part of our brain is to prepare us for that and to help us to feel like we can handle whatever's coming and to plan for that. But because, like you said, it's not real yet. It may never happen. It consumes a lot of energy, and it just as easily could be that if she's like my son who comes in and says, I don't feel good, and I start going through that same story, an hour later we'll be jumping on the furniture because he suddenly miraculously recovered.
yes, very relatable. I would think, especially with boys more than girls, at least my experience has been like that. The miracles happen.
So it is, it's like we have this double-edged, you know, part of our brain that wants to help keep us alive and keep us in control, but at the same time it creates so much anxiety and doubt. And slowing down long enough to be able to examine it, is this useful? Is this serving me right now? Is this the only way to interpret this situation? Can be very helpful if we can build a habit around that.
Yeah, it brings us to the point that, are we mastering this mind, or is this mind mastering us?
Mm.
Because we have the mind to serve us. And yes, the mind is equipped with really good mechanisms to protect us. And it is a beautiful thing what we have, but at the same time, we have to be able to train it so that we can decide, when does it serve me to be more vigilant and when does it not serve me to be more vigilant and take actions. I think that's a really key factor, because we do not live in a world that the news is filled with happiness and positivity. So we can get trapped in all the possible layers of anxiety. There is a school shooting happening in our world. There are accidents happening in our world. There is all kinds of things happening in our world. So if we want to get trapped into that, some parts of it is that we have control over some of it. Some parts of it, we don't have control over parts of it. So there is a lot to think about around when we want to master our mind and what we want to feed our mind. Mm. It's a very different conversation, maybe a topic for another time.
Yes. Maybe you can come back and we'll talk about that too. I think that's a really important part of this conversation as well. Kathy, this has been such a fantastic conversation. Do you have any final thoughts? And where can we find you if anybody is interested in connecting with you?
Absolutely, Kim. Final thought is, I encourage everyone to pay attention to what they feel and really examine how much of it is a fact and how much of it is a story, as we've been talking about. And yes, they can connect with me through heartmindtuning.com. Also, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I probably post like 4 or 5 times a week. And there are master classes that I have, there are workshops that I have. If folks are interested, we can definitely talk. And as of yesterday, we started the monthly newsletter. So folks, join, subscribe, let's stay in touch, and let's enjoy having these conversations that keep us aware of our mind and how we are guiding our lives.
Wonderful, Kathy. Thank you so much. And we'll link to those and links in the show notes as well. It was such a pleasure to have this discussion with you. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
Thanks so much for listening to the Imposter Syndrome Files. If you would like to continue this conversation in a safe and trusted space, I would love for you to join my virtual discussion group every Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern. For the past several years, the group has been limited to women, but it is now open, regardless of gender, to anyone who is interested in exploring and troubleshooting common workplace challenges, building better awareness of ourselves and others, and becoming more inclusive allies at work. Check out the show notes for more info on how to find us, and please join us next week for another episode of the Imposter Syndrome Files.